And welcome to the Rangers Rundown, the only podcast with a cast exactly as inconsistent as the Texas Rangers starting rotation. Tonight I am Max, as usual, and I am joined by Mike.
Good evening.
But not by Hayden, despite what our editor is going to say. So, we're going to try and jump into this real quick, knock out some conversation. But first and foremost, welcome back, Mike.
Well, thank you.
I have heard you got all sun-kissed and...
More like sunburned, but no worse for the wear.
Such is life.
I had a near-death experience while snorkeling, which is always fun. So, Ooh. Yeah.
For me, that would just be the entire experience of snorkeling. I'm not much of one for the for open water. I can swim, but I don't like it.
Yeah, I think I may stay away from fast open water for a while. I'll put it that way.
Well, that sounds exciting.
Yeah. But I've missed the podcast, so I am glad to be back.
And the podcast has missed you. As I was just saying before we pushed record, we did spend an entire episode basically just talking about the Atlanta Braves. So we definitely need our guiding light here, our voice of reason to bring us back to the promised land of Texas Rangers organizational discussion.
Oh, dear God. If I'm the voice of reason, we're all in trouble.
Yeah, it's a deeply doomed podcast. But that's okay. It's fun. It's treated us well so far. Treating us well recently as well. A couple of Texas Rangers. I don't know how much baseball you've managed to watch over the last couple of days, but anything really jump out to you as a must-discuss television?
Mike Minor actually could.
He did the thing.
Yeah. The thing we've been hoping about. And saying he was going to do. He did.
It just took the Padres being in town. Thanks, San Diego. I suppose someone had to do it.
Yeah.
Brilliant stuff, though. Just absolutely phenomenal, that game.
Yeah, and what was great is I mean, the whole team seemed really locked in. I mean, they were just making phenomenal plays behind him. That play by Andrews to nail the runner at first, but the throw and the catch by Gallo were just awesome. It was just, I don't know. I watched it start to finish, and I was on the edge of my seat until it was no longer perfect. But still, an outstanding performance by a guy that is going to be around here for a few years, and we need to see that. That gives me hope for the future that maybe we don't need to find five starting pitchers in the minors. Maybe we only need to find four.
Ooh, how exciting!
Yes.
Yeah, Mike Minor turning into a more than one season useful starting pitcher would be at least some sort of shine on this otherwise kind of ugly season. I mean, we talked about him a couple of those episodes back now in that he might not be a very good starting pitcher. I mean, the overall results have really just not been there for us this season. I don't think we've seen the Mike Minor that Texas was hoping to acquire, but... like what he was doing early in the season where we said the results aren't there, but we really like what we're seeing. Yeah, this is a good player, and it just, we just need to get a couple of those games to break the right way and make the numbers look the way we want them to look and say, no, this is the guy we wanted. And that's certainly one way to do it.
Yeah, definitely. And Mike Minor, I've always been hopeful on him just because it seems like he's a little bit of a hard luck kid in that he would have a good performance. Through six innings, he only given up two runs, but then he promptly gives up two hits to start the seventh, and he gets pulled, and a reliever comes in and lets those two inherited runners score, and now it's not that pretty an outing on paper. I think I've seen several of those from him this season, so I don't know. I think that stuff tends to, what comes around goes around, so I think maybe he's going to be giving us a lot to root for here over the rest of the season.
Yep, definitely hoping that is signs of things to come for Mike Minor, not just sort of a blip on the radar, but we know he's a talented pitcher, and like you said, I think it's been very easy to watch, and I've watched almost all of his starts now, and every time I say, he's so close, and it hasn't stuck for him this season, but hopefully it starts to do that, and maybe this is the big breakthrough game he needed. Maybe there was a different breakthrough, though, right along with it, in that his catcher for this game, was somebody new to Mike Minor at the very least, and somebody who's still pretty new to this whole catching at the big league level. But Isaiah Kiner-Falefa got the start behind the plate, went the full game back there, and continues to look good as a catcher. I mean, he called 7 innings of one-hit ball. That's encouraging, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I heard someone on the ticket today saying that the best thing that you see coming out of him with his starts behind the plate is that he disappears behind the mask. You forget that it's him back there because he's just... he's doing a great job. He's framing pitches well. He's helping pitchers. What's the ERA for his three starts? What, 2.05, something like that? It's crazy.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like he belongs. And, you know, now the team, they feel confident with there being no backup catcher other than him on the roster. It's funny. I had to go back and look at it today. It's funny to see the active roster. It shows catchers, and then it's just Cheerios, and you're like, oh yeah, we have IKF, and that lets us do wonderful things like stash Tochi on the bench.
I think it's really cool, and I know we're probably going to get more Carlos Perez back up soon or whatever, some detritus is going to get called up to fill in the backup catcher, but I think this is working pretty well. I think he's shown... caught 26 innings, and I think he's shown that he can clearly go back there and be counted on to go a full game. And it means that we can... I mean, I don't know that we'd really rest Chirinos anymore. And if anything, I think we'd be afraid to use him less often just because we are using our utility infielder as a backup catcher. But I wish for a situation in which we said, this means we can give Robbie a couple more days off here and there, and really let Izzy get back behind the plate and learn this very useful skill that we're hoping he actually presents. I mean, maybe this is a full-time catcher. He's been pretty solid behind the plate. Maybe.
You don't have to squint that hard to see a useful backup catcher with him on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
And you said something about, you know, we're using our utility infielder as the backup catcher. Well, We're kind of not, because right now we don't have a backup catcher on the 25-man, so Profar is really your utility infielder.
That's true.
IKF is just an extra guy, so I don't know. It's fun to me.
Mind. I really wouldn't mind keeping Izzy around as the backup catcher, just keep him on the bench. I mean, I think there's also a very strong argument for letting him hit every day and catch every, you know, near every day down in AAA. That's also good. If that's what we do, if we decide that we need to send him down and let him just work on his catching pretty much full-time down in AAA, cool. Anything that involves him going down and still playing a whole ton of, like, third, short, and second at AAA and just mixing some catching in, I think is bad. Let him work on that as much as possible at the highest level he can, because I think he's looked really good behind the plate, and it's encouraging for a guy who's pretty much barely ever played there to look as strong as he does. I think it's really, really cool.
I mean, honestly, for me, the way I see this playing out, maybe he does get sent down depending on how fast Perez comes up, but August 1st, at the very latest, he's back up, and he's your true utility guy, because I think Profar is going to be your everyday third baseman. So, you know, at that point, he's up for the rest of the season, and he's earned the spot.
And I think he's going to be bringing some new conversations again to what the meaning of a super utility player is. There are players like him who play many positions. Brock Holt, Kike Hernandez are two that always pop to mind. Marwin Gonzalez with the Astros. And those players can find a way to be very valuable despite not being particularly good hitters, especially if they have at least one element of their offensive game that is strong. And in Izzy's case, is that he's pretty good at getting the bat to the ball. I mean, his strikeout rate is at 16%, 16.5%, which is very reasonable for the, you know, especially for the modern age of very high strikeout players. He's sort of the opposite of Chirinos in that way, in that he's at least putting the ball into the field, and that somehow makes you feel better about him as a player, even if it doesn't necessarily make him a more valuable guy. He takes his walks. He's got an 85 WRC+, which is, of course, not good, but that's perfectly acceptable for a bench player who can play above average defense at a whole bunch of positions that include catcher. That's a phenomenally useful player. Like you're saying, it allows a team, say like the 2018 Texas Rangers, to experiment with a Rule 5 guy. Now, I think we've both discussed, and by both I mean I have discussed at length our infatuation with Rule 5 pick Carlos Tochi, our number one Ranger.
Yeah, I wouldn't say I'm infatuated by him, no. No.
Really? Are you not as excited about Carlos Tochi?
No, no. Weird. But it makes me wonder, if is this the new model that you can have a utility infielder slash backup catcher that allows you to be more active in the Rule 5 draft going forward, where you can effectively stash a guy and it's not going to significantly hurt your team? That to me is it's kind of groundbreaking to think about.
And I think it's really interesting for Texas going into 2019, because we figured to be picking in the top couple of picks for the Rule 5 draft. So there may be some interesting guys lying around for us, and interesting guys in terms of position players lying around. And Kiner Falefa should be very well positioned to be that sort of super utility player from the get-go next season. So, I mean, I think you're bang on. It is a very interesting thing to think about as an actual, not just, oh, whoops, but as a strategy or as a legitimate thought process. If you have a bunch of guys who are very flexible, like, say, Jurickson Profar, Isaiah Kiner Falefa, to a lesser extent, Joey Gallo, dudes who are playing multiple positions, you're moving them around, you're able to artificially lengthen your bench. That means that you can do silly things on the bench, like, for example, Rule 5, or something that appeals to me is just lengthening your bench generally. You know, does that mean that you can keep a pinch runner type player? You know, a guy who's not really even a fourth outfielder, but is a really, really good base runner. You know, maybe one of those throwback fourth outfield players. Use one of those guys. Can you keep an extra just bat who can't play the field very well if we have one lying around? With the expansion of bullpens, I think finding ways of strengthening benches that aren't just simply putting more guys on the bench is really big. And so super utility players like Kiner Falefa, I think, are going to be even more valuable now than they've ever been before, where those players have always been valuable. Teams have always wanted to have a guy who can do that because it's super cool and it's useful to be able to move players around. But now you're doing it because there's so tight limits on roster construction. I mean, we're playing with hairs here. It's very, very fine work when it comes into squeezing optimal utility out of a 25-man roster. Having a guy like Isaiah Kiner Falefa eat up your shortstop, second, third, catcher, left field, right field, backup positions, that's incredibly useful. That's very, very cool.
It's huge, yeah. Yeah, because you can always use another bullpen arm. To me, you can never have enough of those, even with the way they're able to manipulate the 25-man with using the 10-day DL. It's still, you always need more arms. That's today's game.
And we stand to be looking at arms in the Rule 5 draft as well, and those guys are often really, truly miserable for the first half of a season. They may not be able to settle in as any kind of even fake major league ready piece until the All-Star break. And so being able to keep a normal-ish bullpen despite having a Rule 5 guy in there, because your utility infielder is also your backup catcher and is good at both things, that you could see Texas try and do it. A couple of teams have done. I think San Diego did it. I know Baltimore did it in terms of keeping more than one Rule 5 player, or keeping more of these out-of-options, questionable guys lying around. We're going to have players next year who are out of options who we're probably still going to want to give a chance. I mean, I think this team is going to keep banging the Ryan Rua drum, for example, and he should be out of options. And Connor Sadzek is going to be out of options.
Yohander Mendez, yeah.
Yeah, Mendez is out of options. Like, these are dudes who the team is not willing to just get rid of quite yet, even though we haven't seen Sadzek at all on the big league team. And Yohander is now in high A, which, next topic, I think. I think Izzy's a very valuable player for a lot of reasons. He's been a good player. I was looking at his Baseball Prospectus numbers earlier just to see if there's enough data here to make a comment on his play as a catcher. To the eye, I think he's been good. He's very athletic behind the plate. He's moving around. I mean, he's always going to need more work on footwork and pop times and game calling. Just he's new to catching, functionally. He's barely been doing it. But all the pieces are there. You say, that could be a pretty good catcher. You know, just give him a chance.
I feel confident he'll get there because he has a high baseball IQ.
Mm-hmm. Everyone has said that.
Yeah, it's that to me, that solves a lot of your problems.
Mm-hmm. He has that. I mean, I almost hate to run into the tropes and the little throwaway lines of baseball, but would you talk about guys who are just ball players? As you can say, it's as meaningless as you want, and I'm sure on some level it is, and I'm sure a lot of people don't really care about this stuff, but it's something that still kind of sticks in the head for me. When you get those Michael Young comps on a guy, of a dude who just knows his way around the game and approaches everything the right way in terms of, and I don't mean the baseball capital R, capital W, right way. I mean the way that you want your coworkers or your classmates or your shipmates. Shout out, my brother is graduating from the first round of Navy training this weekend, so
congrats to him.
Good stuff. And but if you're serving on a ship, if you're in the military, if you're working a job, whatever that job may be, you want guys who seem to love what they do, even if they're faking it, who can put on a good face and want to learn more about what they're doing. And what they're doing can be being a CPA or a pizza delivery guy or a lawyer or a nurse or whatever it is. If anybody just seems to care and actually does care about their job and they're asking the right questions and they're trying to learn more, you can tell. It shines through in somebody. And you got to imagine guys like playing alongside a dude like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. It's got to be fun. It's got to be sort of inspiring seeing a kid like that going out there and just loving baseball and working at baseball so hard.
Yeah, I heard some snippets of a podcast that Ron Washington did recently, and he was talking about, they asked him, what player would you want 25 of on your roster? And he mentioned several people, but Michael Young was one of those people, and he talked about a situation where he was trying to, you know, instill something new with the team. He wanted to take them in a different direction in a way they had never gone before. This is a young team, so you've got to figure it's prior to 2010. And he said, I needed buy-in from the team, and so I pulled Michael Young aside and I said, this is what I need. You know, I need you to help me to get these young kids to buy into what I'm asking them to do. And he said, I don't know what he said to them, but the next time I saw them, they were all 100% into what we were going to do, and we never looked back from that point forward. And I look at Izzy as a guy that's like that. He's a company guy. He's going to do what's best for the team. He's always going to be open to listening to what you're trying to accomplish. He's never going to be one of these guys that's going to, you know, go rogue on a manager because he doesn't like his style or something like that. He's always going to toe the company line.
Yeah, I don't know another way of saying it. It's fun. It's cool. I'm glad he's a Ranger. He's easy to root for. He's a valuable part of the team, and he's somebody I'm really pulling for multiple reasons. He's not just a good story. He's a good part of the team as an actual ball player on the field. He's improving the clubhouse. He's improving the on-the-field product. He's potentially improving the organizational flexibility when it comes to roster construction and what they do in the offseason. Those are all incredibly useful things. They're great. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, a swift contender for favorite Ranger in 2018. Surprising contender.
You forgot one thing. He could also be improving the pitching staff, and that is, there's something to be said for that.
So we don't have enough data really to make an interesting call about him as a catcher, but the preliminary stuff from like Baseball Prospectus, for example, is that he's at least average, and that's super cool. Fangraphs has him as being an above average defender at short and third, like a well above average defender. They really quite like him. Especially at shortstop. Only 17 innings, so very, very small sample there. They don't have anything up yet for his catching. They really, really like him at third. They actually don't really like him a ton at second base, but I'm not sure what that might be.
We've already got two second basemen on the 25-man, so I think we're okay.
Yeah, I'm not super worried about it.
No.
No. We'll figure that part out.
Yeah.
I wanted to respond to what you're talking about with Ron Washington. Starting an all-25-man, all-one-guy roster, saying Mike to start is really good.
And oh, boy. We're headed for the Trout conversation again, aren't we?
We're heading for the Trout conversation.
I saw it coming a mile away.
We all did. He has the best slugging of his career, the best MVP of his career. He's got 13 steals and 23 home runs. He's got 6.5 B-WAR. 6.6.
But he hasn't been the AL Player of the Week in like the last 3 years that I saw pointed out, I think, on Lone Star Ball today, which cracked me up.
Baseball is incredibly dumb. I don't know what this is. I don't know who it was last week. I saw something about like, it was like Justin Upton or somebody with a couple of home runs and they batted 400. And it's like, cool. Mike Trout was probably worth more in two games last week than whoever this was worth in the entire week. Like, let's be honest here. The dude's just playing out of his freaking head. It's incredible to watch. But we're gonna try and not talk about Mike Trout too terrible much tonight. We got our mics all full up. So somebody we did want to talk about, though, also in terms of their defense and what they kind of do to the team and the way they can change the team, is Delino DeShields, who we have been very up and down on this podcast. I don't think we've really been down on Delino at all. We have talked about some of his issues, and we've seen some struggles this season from him at the plate. But something that we were hoping for early, and that I think people who have followed this team for the last couple of years were really, really hoping for and have been hoping for years, is that Delino DeShields has turned himself into one of the best center fielders in baseball.
He has, yeah. There's a stat today that I saw where he leads all of Major League Baseball in outs above average, which, being an old man, I didn't even know that was a stat. But, you know, he's number one in the league. You know, you get guys behind him like Billy Hamilton and Harrison Bader. You've got Adam Engel. You've got Lorenzo Cain. You've got Starling Marte. You've got, this one cracked me up, Lewis Brinson. He's like number 16 on this list, which we thought he was going to be the center fielder of the future for the Rangers for quite some time.
Yeah.
DDJ's number one.
He's been a revelation out there. I know I've been a big fan of Delino since we took him in the Rule 5 draft. He's the kind of player I really like. I like these super fast, super athletic guys. I'm a big fan of his whole approach and style. I like the fact that he seemed like he wanted to work the plate and take walks, that he looks like he's working it on every play. And that first year or two, the defense is pretty rough, but you said this dude's one of the fastest guys in the game. I mean, if he just like works at it a little bit, if he just sort of learns his routes and gets his jumps right, I mean, this is a guy who should be very, very good. And you know, he had the questionable weight gain, and then he's had some injury issues and he's had some approach problems. But this year, he, like you're saying, he's just become one of the, if not the best center fielder in the game. He's using that speed. He's weaponized his speed in center field. He's banging into walls. He's pulling back home runs. He had that great one to help preserve Miners. I think it was at the time it was still perfect, right? That
was
sixth inning.
Mm-hmm.
What, I mean, it's been phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of center fielders with the Rangers over the years. You know, especially since the ballpark in Arlington opened back in '94. There are so many years where you would see the other team hit a ball to center field, and you would just kind of cringe, going, "Oh boy, what's going to happen now?" Because center field at the Temple that's a very tough position because of the angles, because there's just so much real estate that you have to cover. And with DeShields, it's like almost
of Texas's corner outfielders.
Well, yeah, that there's that too, of course. But it's like now a ball gets hit to center field. I mean, if you looked on that play, I mean, Miner hung his head. He thought that thing was out for sure.
He knew it.
And it was exciting to watch him. And it was like, yeah, he's got this. Of course he has this. And he had it. It's so much fun to watch him just track down a ball that you think he has no business catching up to that ball.
Anybody who wants to whine about Delino DeShields' bat or his approach or like for some incredibly dumb reason, his defense, if there's still Delino DeShields defense haters out there, line up and then go and rewatch weeks like 2 through 4 of the season when Drew Robinson was the center fielder. Just do that to yourself. That's right. You're not doing that. Cool. So I wanted to prove that point.
Like every, or go back and watch every year before this year.
Right. If you want to feel good about yourself, you watch the Josh years. Just, it was crazy watching Josh Hamilton play center field. But man, Delino DeShields is crazy out there. It's in a really, really fun and very, very good way.
I would venture guess that he is the fastest Ranger that's ever played. I mean, I can't imagine anyone faster than him.
He's got to be in the conversation.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a big kitten-faced Craig Gentry fan, and Gentry was speedy. He was very quick.
He was
quite fast, but man, Delano would smoke him.
I think so. Yeah. I don't recall Kitten Face just going and robbing those home runs like DDJ has.
Craig was always a very smooth runner. I do not want to use the phrase deceptively fast. It's like the white guy fast phrase for baseball. Like, is it a fast right. white guy? He's deceptive. Craig Gentry was like really smoothly quick. He got up to speed and he looked like a, I don't know, like a...
I'll tell you one thing he has that I haven't seen yet from DDJ is that inside the park home run speed. He could run the bases and pull that off. If someone misplayed a ball, it's not that he's faster, I think, than DDJ. I think DDJ just hasn't had those opportunities where he's hit that ball in the right part of the park.
Has he ever? I swear to you, Delano, maybe it was an error.
It might have been. Yeah. Yeah, he might have one. Yeah. But... I mean,
I want to see more of them. It's exactly. Home runs are one of those things that I truly love. I will rewatch.
Agreed.
Home run videos like 10 times.
Inside the park home runs, suicide squeezes, things like that that you just don't see very often. Those are the things that thrill me. The home run, yawn.
Yeah. I'll watch anything that is an inside the parker. I love outfield assists at the plate. Those are super
yes.
exciting for me.
Yes.
And I like him when it's not necessarily a great throw, but when it's a great catch, too.
Like, yeah.
I think I've talked about it on here, but maybe I haven't. As much as I despised the guy, A.J. Przinski had a, like, sixth sense for blocking the plate without actually blocking it.
Right.
Like, he would just put that foot out there and redirect people's tags all the time, and it was incredible to me. Like, he really elevated, especially that was Leonis Martin, who had a cannon for her arm. So we were getting more of those opportunities at the plate. And I think Brzezinski doesn't get enough credit for actually being a really, really good defensive catcher in that area. I don't know who actually gives that credit. I don't know if anybody cares about that credit. But I do, dang it. Like, it's me. I watch triple plays. Like,
yeah.
I love outfield assists, though. Those are...
I love the right fielder throwing out the guy trying to run from first to third. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorites. Just
get the
crazy arms. Because the runner, I mean, he has all the data right in front of him. He knows don't run on this guy, and he's going to try and take third, and then he gets nailed, and it's just it's a thing of beauty.
It's like Jose Guillen a couple of years back. That play pops up in MLB.com's or MLB at bats. A replay machine during commercials sometimes. That's an incredibly good one. Yasiel Puig is always good for this. Yoenis Cespedes too. Nomar Mazara. Mazara's getting himself a couple of highlight reel plays. He's still slow and doesn't have a very good glove, but dang, that kid can throw.
He can. He's got a rocket for an arm.
It's a really good arm.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of those plays being made over the years.
Mm-hmm. I hope we do. I hope he's a good Ranger for years to come, which leads me to talking about a player who's been a good Ranger for many years past and has maybe indicated he wishes to be a Ranger for years to come as well. You were the one who broke this news to me, so I want to turn the mic back over here.
Well, I mean, it's no surprise that Beltre he's my favorite Ranger ever. So,
is really surprising if you told yourself that 5 years ago.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, as old as I am, I mean, I've watched Nolan come through and Juan Gonzalez and Fez Rodriguez. David Klein. And Fred Manrique. There's my throwback joke guy. Yeah. Go back and look him up.
Mine is Rick Helling.
No, Rick Helling was actually good. Fred Manrique, he was sparest of the spare. He's my joke Ranger answer to any trivia question. So
I don't know. I will never forget Rick Helling. Like, he was so indelible to me as like a young kid of what Rangers pitchers were, and I don't know why. Whenever I think of like, how do I explain the Texas Rangers to a friend? I don't know why, but my head still goes to Rick Helling, a dude who retired like 10 years ago. I tried explaining Rick Helling to my wife the other day, and I was like, there was this guy. I don't know what to tell you here. He was Rick Helling. He just did stuff. But I bet your actual favorite.
He was from Fargo.
It was cool, dang it.
Yeah, so Beltre. It was, I guess, AJM broke the news that that Heyman had come out and said that Beltre wants to re-sign with the Rangers in 2019. And when I saw that, I looked at it in two different ways. Is it he's willing to take one for the team, be traded to a contender, and hope he actually gets his World Series ring, and then he can come back and finish his career with the Rangers? That's kind of the way I read it. But, I mean, it could be that he intends to, you know, block any trade that the Rangers might try, unless it's truly to maybe one of two or three elite teams that really have a legitimate shot at making the World Series. Maybe it's going from that angle. But, you know, it's funny because as soon as this news came out, you know, I go to Lone Star Ball because I'm wanting to see, okay, what's their reaction? And I'm seeing some contrarian opinions.
What?
For lack of a better term, which annoyed me. I won't call out specific people, but you know who you are. But it was funny because AJM, he put it out on Twitter and said, you know, what are your feelings on this? Do you want the Rangers to re-sign Beltre in 2019? You don't care, or no, they should move on? 86% said yes, they should actually absolutely sign them, and I could not agree more, because this is a guy. It's funny, if I can digress for a minute, because I was reading, maybe it was, you know, MLBTradeRumors.com or something like that, and they were looking at potential homes for Beltre after July 31st, and the Braves were an organization that was brought up because, you know, they're starting to contend, and, you know, third base is something where he might be able to help them out. And there were some Braves fans that were commenting on this post, and I swear it happened like three or four times where the poster said something to the effect that Beltre is one of the greatest active players. And I wanted to just reach through my computer and go, you can take active out of that sentence there. He is one of the greatest players to ever suit up.
Yes, and period.
Period. And so, you know, last night he got a double, and that tied him with Hank Aaron at number 12 on that list. And I found this to be a very interesting list because I was like, okay, who does he have to pass? Looking at this list, it's funny because it's not slanted towards the modern-day player, which most stats seem to be, especially on the offensive side. So maybe doubles aren't something that are, you know, steroids aren't going to help you hit more doubles.
Yeah, there's a lot of black and white at the top of this leaderboard.
It's bizarre. I mean, you've got, it's Tris Speaker, then Pete Rose, then Stan Musial, then Ty Cobb, Craig Biggio. Okay, there's a modern day guy. George Brett, Nat LaJoy, whatever you, I don't know how to say his name. Carl Yastrzemski, Otis Wagner, David Ortiz, Albert Pujols, Hank Aaron, and now Beltre is wedged in there. And I'm like, that just shows what an old school badass Adrian Beltre is. He just, every time you see him catch up to someone or go ahead of someone, it's just awesome to see. And so I was like, okay, answer me this one, Max.
Okay.
Okay, you know, we talked before the podcast started that I'm hoping against hope that he's going to get to 500 home runs. I think it's going to be dicey. If he does retire at the end of next year, he's going to need a push. He's definitely lost some power. But I'm really pulling for him to get the 500 home runs, because if he gets there and he has 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, and 600 doubles, who else is in that club?
It's a very small list. So 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, 600 doubles?
Yep.
So Bonds is in there?
Nope.
He's got 600 doubles. He's got the home runs. Did he not have 3,000 hits?
I guess not.
What?
I did the research on this. I mean, unless the research.
Bonds has 2,935 hits. What? Okay, that's weird.
That's awesome.
Okay. So, is Yaz in that list?
Nope.
He didn't hit 500 home runs. Aaron.
Yes.
Pujols will be. He's already there.
Nope. I'll just go ahead and save you Ortiz. The anguish now.
Did Ortiz get the 500 dingers?
Right now.
He didn't have 3,000 hits, though.
Right now, it's a party of one. It is Hank Aaron. If Beth Ray can get there, it's him and Hank Aaron. Talk about rarefied air. Because that's just the consummate hitter.
Oh, and it is also Pujols. Pujols made it this year. Yeah, he just got the 3,000 hits like a month ago.
Oh, he's got dang it. I guess 600 I was looking at the wrong
home runs and 600 doubles.
I was so excited that I found the stat, and dang it. All right.
I mean, that...
Hayden, feel free to cut out the last 5 minutes if you want.
Hey, unless it consists of Albert Pujols, Adrian Beltre, and Hank Aaron, is a pretty dang good list, though. I mean... For all that, like, I have some old man hate for Albert Pujols because he's an Angel and because he was a filthy, filthy Cardinal at just the wrong times. Albert Pujols is also just one of the freakiest good hitters of all time.
I agree.
I'm okay with him being there. I'm kind of hoping he keeps sucking so that Beltre can pass him in doubles somehow, because it's not like Pujols is liking out a lot of doubles these days.
Right.
Because Adrian needs, like, 20 doubles to get into the top 10. Actually, he only needs nine. He needs nine doubles to pass Ortiz, assuming that Pujols doesn't move up the list very much. But 20 doubles will get him up over Honus Wagner, and so he'll be fine even if Pujols keeps racking doubles.
Yeah.
30 doubles over the next, say, year or two puts him just sort of nap. He needs 34 doubles to move up to seven. But I could see 20 doubles easy, and him being top 10 all time in doubles. A top 30 player in basically every offensive category.
And going back to the sheer greatness that is Adrian Beltre on the all-time hits list, okay, very doable as long as he stays healthy. If he gets 80 hits between now and the end of the season, he is going to pass. Let me find my list here. Dang it. He is going to pass George Brett, Paul Wehner, Robin Yount, Tony Gwynn, A-Rod, and Dave Winfield.
He's 10 off of A-Rod, so that...
Yeah.
That's
oh, nice. Yeah, that's happening.
We're doing that this year.
So, that's this year, yeah. Next year, if he only gets 135 hits for the entire year, which... I put that there because it's going to take a lot more than that to get one more up. But he can crack the top 10. If he cracks the top 10...
To pass Molitor for...
Yeah.
For 10.
He's going to pass Molitor,
yes.
Eddie Collins, Willie Mays, Eddie Murray, Nat Majoy. Yeah. And Cal Ripken. Yeah. It's just... It's crazy the rarefied air that he's getting into. And that's why, yes, I want to see him sign... Does that mean that he stays here and then he just signs that one-year extension? Or does it mean they trade him to a contender and then he comes back? I don't care. I will take every at-bat we can get with that guy because it's something truly special that we're watching right now.
It's really, really fun. And it's good. Like, we're not watching some dude just sort of squeaking out crappy hits at the end of a career, Pete Rose style, or even what Angels fans are dealing with Albert Pujols, who is hitting some of these same marks, but has been real bad.
Yeah. Just shell of his former self. Yeah.
I mean,
it's sad to watch that. I mean, you know, on a local scale, Michael Young. I mean...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and Beltre, he's not like that. Yeah, he's missing the power. There's no doubt about it. He does not have...
He's posting his second worst season since 2009, sure. But it's still a 120 OPS plus. I mean, he's OPSing 827 on the season. He's batting 313, 376.
And he's still getting to all those balls hit to him at third.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah.
And I like what we've been doing with him recently, where I say we as if I'm making a decision here, but I like what Texas has been doing with him. And they're giving him every other day off. Like, they're keeping those legs fresh. We've got the defensive profile to do this. We don't really care about one ball squeaking through the infield in a kind of lost season. We want to keep him in the lineup, not winning games for us by fielding balls that Isaiah Kiner-Falefa or Jurickson Profar can't. So giving him every other day to DH while we've got Profar and Izzy and Gallo on this team, great. I think it's been very successful so far, and we're seeing just good Adrian, and baseball's more fun when Adrian Beltre is playing it.
Yeah, and I think that the team must have had a conversation with him where they said, this is what we're doing, because previously I think he'd said something to the effect that, you know, he wasn't going to DH if he couldn't play third base and it's time to hang him up or something like that. But I think he's more open to the idea now of keeping himself fresh, because anytime he's running the base paths, you know, last night scoring from second, it scared me watching him. With each step, I'm like, please don't pull a hamstring. Don't pull a hamstring.
I'll give up a run and lose a game if it means that Adrian gets to play another 30 games that he wouldn't play otherwise.
Agreed.
I think everyone would. So, Adrian Beltre, we know you're listening to this podcast. We know you're looking for when you get your actually good award. Trust us, it's coming soon. You're pretty good. You're going to get one. You're going to earn it at some point in your career. You will receive the last award you have yet to earn as a big league player. You have not yet earned your actually good card.
Exactly. But go out and earn it.
Yeah. Go out there. Hit some balls for me. Do it for us.
What have you done for me lately?
Do it for the pod. I don't care about your 7,000 home runs. None of them were hit when we were recording. So, it's been good. I think it will continue to be good. As you were saying a while ago when we sort of started this conversation on Beltre, I think my dream scenario is definitely that that Texas manages to trade him, send him somewhere, give him a realistic shot at a ring this year, and then they bring him back next year and let him keep racking these things up. I don't think we're looking at 2019 as being very competitive for Texas. I don't think we're at that place on a win curve where we as fans should be expecting the team to make every decision from a purely rational, how many games can we squeak out of our record this way? So if that's what the team wants to do, if that's what Adrian wants to do, I'm not going to get in the way.
No, definitely not. I mean, I look at the same thing as the Mavs have with Dirk right now. They're in the middle of their rebuild, and they're looking like they might actually contend this coming season. Does that mean they're going to push Dirk aside? No, Dirk still wants to play. And when you have a god like that on your team, especially a lifer like Dirk, that don't even get me started on that tangent, you let him do his thing. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how they start to understand, oh yeah, I'm not as fast, I'm not as good as I used to be, so yes, I am more willing to take a more supportive role in the team. You let them do that, and it all works out, and it's not going to hinder the progress of anyone.
As a fan, would much rather watch Dirk grind out one last not particularly great, or Beltre grind out one last not particularly great season with my team playing the way I would like the game to be played, in a season where I know that my team is not two wins away from the World Series, where it really kills me, rather than watching Beltre play one stupid year with the like Phillies or the Rays or some crap like that. Like, please just kill me now. Like, I don't want to see one dumb year of a couple of happy memories and then playing on a competitive team that is complaining all the time about fielding a 40-year-old player. Nah, keep him home. 2020 is more Texas's window anyways.
Exactly.
Yeah. Free Luka Doncic. He's probably going to be very, very good. All the basketball people I know are pretty thrilled that the Mavs managed to land him. So that's pretty cool. Hopefully Texas can land their Luka Doncic somehow. And I hope it's not some 6'6" European kid, because that seems like it wouldn't necessarily be very good for baseball. You know.
Maybe a 7-foot German. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. What's that pitcher's name? Van Mill, I think, was the 7-foot pitcher who played for the Netherlands in the WBC.
Oh dear.
Yeah, they had an enormous, just bonker, bigger than John Roush, the super giant pitcher who played for like the Nats and Mets and a couple other teams.
Wow.
They had a bigger guy than that, which, all right, okay. that's nuts, but all right. So I definitely am would rather see Beltre play one more season with Texas in 2019 and finish out a career that he actually enjoys than see him go and play one stupid season with the Reds or even a competitive team. Like, I'd rather see him as a Ranger than as a Red Sox next year.
Or a Yankee, or an Astro, or a Dodger. Yeah. No, it doesn't make sense.
I think for this year, it's fun to envision him being a Red Sox again, or a Dodger again, and just getting that run for a ring with a team that's actually in it this season, where Texas is not. But, yeah, we'll see what we get.
Yeah, and if we trade him, yeah, it would be great if he re-signed here in the offseason, but can you name a situation where that's ever happened? Because I was racking my brains earlier, and I had a big bag of nothing.
Where a team trades a guy and then signs him the next year?
Especially trades the guy, he goes and gets a ring, and then he comes back to that original team the next year.
Did...
Any sport.
Chapman?
With who?
Aroldis Chapman.
Wow. Bam.
Yeah, this sport. Dang it. And on that bombshell, we want to Chapman him. But, like, only this part of the Chapman thing, not the whole, like, discharging a firearm into your garage floor because you're arguing with your girlfriend part. Like, not that part at all. That's a pretty bad part. It's a bad thing. It's not good.
I'm sorry.
Okay, we're going to end this before we do something stupid.
Yeah.
Go Rangers. Go Frisco. Go Spokane. Oh, Hans Kraus.
HFC.
Bringing that gasoline. It's been good. And there's a kid. Just do some box score scouting for yourselves. Take a look at the AZL Rangers. There's a kid on that team named Yeri Rodriguez. I don't know.
Ooh, I have not heard of this kid.
15 strikeouts in 11 innings with a .79 ERA.
It's not bad.
It's not bad at all. So, no. There's some fun kids out there. We're definitely going to dive into a couple of these guys who may be making their debuts with Texas after the trade deadline has passed. There's a number of relievers, a couple of the pitchers, and maybe even one or three position players who are in that conversation that we may be seeing playing with the Rangers come August at the very least, but very likely in July as well, as Texas probably wants to try and get out in front of the trade market. So look forward to that conversation probably on Sunday when Hayden rejoins us.
Yes.
And we should have some wild, rampant, nonsensical trade, not speculation, but just like scut work to run through. I'm going to just be making up stuff. I'm going to be trading literally everyone to the Atlanta Braves so they're easier for me to see.
Right, yeah, it's going to be Shin-Soo Choo for Clayton Kershaw. It's going to be those types of trades, right?
Probably. That's a good trade. I did that. Kershaw's hurt. He's busted. I mean,
exactly.
Lefties are... You can't trust them.
Exactly.
They're untrustworthy people. So, on that note, we will bid everyone adieu. Go watch some baseball. Enjoy what we've got while we've got it. It's always fun.
Go Wood Ducks.
Go Wood Ducks. Go snorkeling? Don't go snorkeling. It's officially against the policy of the Rangers running. Good night, everybody.
Good night.